the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
It's been an extraordinary few weeks for crypto, crowned by the Trump tariff wars and a wild roller coaster in the financial markets. The Nasdaq is still 12% off its February peak, even after recovering somewhat last week when President Donald Trump, heeding the advice of his Treasury Secretary, suspended most tariff increases against the US's trading partners, all of course except China. JP Morgan sees a 60% chance of recession in 2025, and that's up from 40% earlier in the year, with the likelihood that interest rates will start dropping from June to offset the damage done by the tariff increases just announced by Donald Trump. Now, the fact that gold has hit an all-time high above $3,200 an ounce and Bitcoin has bounced sharply from its recent low of $74,800, I think is indicative of the rapidly altering perception of risk in the financial markets. The U.S. 10-year Treasury yields spiked with rumors circulating that foreigners are bailing on the dollar. So how bad is this? To answer that, we're joined by no stranger to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, Shivan Mudli, macro strategist at 88. Hi, Shivan. Good to talk to you again, and thanks for your time. Help us understand what's going on here. Spiking interest rates, gold at an all-time high, there's talk of recession. Just how bad are things?
Hey, Kieran. Yeah, good to be back. I think the world is in a sort of a different place from where we last left it in terms of when we spoke. But, you know, simply let's break it down for our audience. We have the fundamental issue or the fundamental function of bonds is that they have an inverse relationship to price, yield to price, meaning that higher the yield, the lower the price of that bond. And vice versa in the sort of the macroeconomic environment. So overall, a huge impact if we look at, you know, the cost of capital globally, valuations of equities, and just emerging markets. I think we're in the right place where if with sort of these tariff increases, it sort of presented a golden goose for South Africa if done right. And we'll touch a bit upon that later on. But fundamentally, when we're looking at these bonds, these 10-year yield sort of raising or rising in this case, it's the long-term interest globally starts to have this knock-on effect. And we can see that sort of shake a few branches in sort of the macro environment. But then when we start look at how that impacts equities, we're going to start to see those discounted rates when we're looking at discount value models really impact those present cash flows, the present value of future cash flows, ideally on the fundamental basis. But overall, there's a lot of, how should I say, volatility in the market that's likely to continue for a little while. And we've seen that with the 90 cents move from last week to just to today in the Rand, for example. So yeah, definitely a lot of volatility overall.
Just talk about this golden goose. You see an opportunity here for South Africa.
Yeah. So why a golden goose in this case is with the policy transitions globally, it really sort of, you're sort of saying, okay, the dollar's weakening overall. It creates this environment where people with tariffs are encouraged or countries are encouraged to use their own currency. And by that, you're really promoting your own trade function. So whether that's always been sort of something the BRICS wanted, is trade with your trading partners amongst your own currency. And it puts South Africa sort of in a benefit if they're trading with BRICS partners or other importing countries to say, look, we'll trade in your domestic currency if the dollar's weakening significantly. Because we already see that with this offloading of bonds, for example, it may not be more foreign distribution out of USD, partially might, but we're not saying all of it is, but we may believe that the volatility in the long run or medium term is likely maybe active dumping of these treasuries by larger economies that hold significant US treasuries. But just going back, South Africa can take advantage off this opportunity of trading with your partners along your own domestic currency poses an advantage there, whether it be commodities, for example. I think there's opportunity in the market. It's something I'm still looking at is how far can you push that domestic currency golden goose?
Now, all of this is obviously created, it's man-made. It was created by Donald Trump following the advice of his economic advisor, Stephen Moran. There's been a lot of articles about this whole policy prescription that Stephen Moran wrote. Tariffs is one part of that, but the whole idea is to weaken the dollar. And he sees tariffs as a lever, basically, to get currencies around the table. And there is precedent for this. It happened back in the 1980s, where the United States got Japan and Germany around and said, you got to strengthen your currency. In other words, weaken the dollar, because that would make exports more favorable for the United States. So in this light, and we have seen a dollar weakening against the euro quite significantly over the last couple of weeks. So is this a 5D chess match, as some people are saying? And if so, is it working?
It is. In theory, I think I sort of understand where they're coming from. So think of it in four pillars, right? Where it's a weaker dollar to boost exports and manufacturing. And that's really, Trump's been an advocate for bringing that manufacturing back to the States. The theory around it is you can shrink the deficit in which the U.S. Government currently has, but it also sort of relieves the debt burden by in inflating this in a way. And we'll expand on these pillars a bit more. And the last one is sort of giving this monetary flexibility through currency without really, I would say, it more increasing your transmission mechanism overall. So what do I mean by these pillars fundamentally, and how can this sort of evolve? So the weaker dollar and boosting exports is more on the lines of import substitution. So economic principles there, and it's more export-led growth creates where this industrial policy is, kind of gives that manufacturing power back to the States. However, there's massive limitations in that is we haven't seen real policy transitions and policy really changing in the US. And that comes down to what are the productivity for functions doing? What are the energy costs? I know Trump or Republicans have always been drill, baby, drill. So we don't know how that's really going to really transition. Also, infrastructure and trade barriers, we're going to see that sort of become sort of a factor in terms of how these policies really adjust once you weaken the dollar. Shrinking the trade deficit, exports are cheaper in the simplest way, but there's partial effectiveness in this assumption. And that really comes down to the US customer in certain import categories might be inelastic, and meaning that they're still going to buy an iPhone. They're still going to buy a MacBook. They're still going to buy German cars. There's those fundamentals that really play into things that I think people might be looking away from, which would still exist in the market. And then relieving of the debt burden in this case, I think the revaluing or the refinancing of treasuries come up in June, I think, somewhere there. So, but it really comes down in a fundamental way to foreign creditors holding treasuries get paid in devalued dollars. It really puts them on the back foot in terms of this case of taking on the bonds, and these bondholders are really suffering negative real returns. So those are where some aspects lie. And then coming down to monetary flexibility, we're seeing there that the transition mechanism of money might be a bit higher. It'll increase. And that'll sort of lead to a way in which that might lead to quantitative easing continuing and coming up. So I think, yeah, those are where my thoughts are in terms of this new trade policy function really goes down to.
It's going back to this golden goose. The opportunity that you see here for South Africa is to trade more in alternative currencies to the US dollar, if I understand you correctly.
Yeah.
A lot of discussion going on internationally about the very same thing. China even saying that the United States is not, it's a big trading partner, but they can survive by trading less. I don't think they ever anticipate that they're not going to trade with them at all. But, you know, our countries around the world all looking at this and saying, you know, this is just too fickle. This is just too capricious, the way that Donald Trump has been operating. And we're going to have a plan B. And that may be to find new markets elsewhere. Is that part of what you see happening?
Yeah, I think you're looking at trade partners that are, that you can get benefit. I think the US is also South Africa's third largest importer of, I think it's more manufacturing goods in that case. But I need to recheck that statistic. But fundamentally where it can lie is that with our largest trading partners, our largest trading partners still fall within the BRICS nations. And there's nothing stopping South Africa from actually exploring those options, because demanding yuan, in this case, Indian rupee, and who we exporting to. I think there's opportunity that exists. And I think the economic advisors that are speaking to Cyril right now, they should be considering these matters, you know, in the long run. There's an opportunity for BRICS to have that transition sooner than later, because they already have the partnership. They welcome new partners to BRICS, and that opportunity exists. Trump is pushing you towards looking at your partners and saying, hey, I have apples and I am willing to give you this for maybe some steel, and having that conversation in the long run, because those trading partners are going to be something if the world order sort of has this explosive mentality in terms of, you know, a tweet can drive markets. It's having that consistency amongst your trade partners to say, look, I'm happy to deal with you in my domestic currency. Are you happy to deal with me in yours? And continuing to trade in the benefit in the long run, even an independent method like that can also really support the US. And I think if that scenario sort of plays out in my book, it would be a case of they'll still be importing US goods, and just on a weaker dollar aspect. Because if we look at like oil is down $65 a barrel, making this podcast as well. So I think there's opportunity in terms of global growth really transitioning to what we normally know as the norm of China growing, people demanding goods out of China. It's like, okay, what are our next scenarios that can play out?
Yeah, I mean, I see the euro trading today at $1.14. It was very close to parity just a few months ago. So in that sense, there is some method to this madness that the dollar weakening against the euro is pretty much what Trump wanted. But let's talk for a minute about the drop in Bitcoin. It did drop down to about $74,000 quite recently, bounced. It's nearly up to $85,000 today. Now, Michael Saylor of MicroStrategy, he bought more than 80,000 Bitcoin in the first quarter of 2025. Now he's hinting that he may be in the market for more, bearing in mind that MicroStrategy already owns 2.5% of all Bitcoin supply. And now Saylor clearly sees this as a monumental failure in the dollar on its way. Is that how you see it?
I would look at it in a way of store of value case. And would Bitcoin become store of value? No, I think the volatility is too much in this case. But also, if I walk into a store and I'm going to pay 0.0001 for a Coke because my currency is devaluing and I know I'm going to make more money tomorrow with Bitcoin going higher, I don't think I would get to that level of using it as a store value. I think it's in the short run, the dollar may see its volatility, but in the long run, it still controls almost, I would say, more than 70% of global trade in terms of which is done through the dollar. So de-dollarizing in any way or form, I think, is very far, because there's a lot of trade routes, SWIFT network, significant dollar transactions done through there. But Michael Saylor has always been a Bitcoin maxi. There's nothing wrong in that. I think there's value in having Bitcoin in your portfolio. There's method to madness in that, but it's more of an investment asset than it is a store of value. Thinking it's going to replace the dollar in a very short period of time.
Yeah. At what point do you see Bitcoin decoupling from tech stocks? Because there have been very parallel trends. They are so closely correlated. Now, crypto economist Lynn Alden sees this happening in a particular set of circumstances. Should the U.S. enter a period of stagflation, that's where you've got high inflation, you've got unemployment, but no economic growth. Then you could start to see a decoupling of Bitcoin from the tech market. Well, what do you think?
In some way, yes, fundamentally on the basis that you would look at BTC on more its future value than its present value. And with that, tech stocks would fall in exactly the same way, meaning that the higher interest rates impact the discount rate and obviously future cash flows on a present basis. But when looking at that on a BTC, everyone's really looking 5, 10, 15 years out on BTC. So when holding an asset like that, you're not really looking at the present value. So I was looking at a model which showed recession and how the correlation was to tech stocks before we jumped on podcast. And what was shown is that in a case of recession, which two recessions since my charts showed BTC coming into the market and how the NASDAQ performed, there were only two times in a recession, twice in two recessions where there was decoupling of BTC to NASDAQ. I think I'm still going to do a lot more investigation on that. But there's going to be a difference. When we look at crypto now, there's correlation and causation are two different things. And when we look at BTC price, it's more causation on psychology aspects in terms of if the market continues to run more unemployment and just run weak, there's no anticipation for someone to buy BTC if they need to feed themselves in the short run. And I think that's where your impact would really lie.
Interesting. Well, what are some of the new crypto projects that excite you? There's been quite a lot recently. The altcoin market has been quite devastated over the last few weeks. So where do you see some of the interest coming from?
So some of the interest is looking at a few roll-ups on the Ethereum network. I don't think I have a real set methodology right now in looking at what's happening or what's taking over the market. I think the market is a lot more mature than it was in the last two cycles. And I think from that, when looking at the market now, we're looking at utility and what's coming to the market. And I still remain confident in my thesis that we're going to be looking at tokenization. The next big thing is a 24-hour traditional market. And what has the technology, security, and settlement layer to do that fast, to do that securely, and to ensure that a market may run for 24 hours in a traditional space? And there's very few protocols currently doing that. And I think I'm still doing research in terms of what really fulfills that thesis in the market right now. But overall, I think if you're sticking to your legacies, you're sticking to the big players like the Bitcoin and the Ethereum, you're really taking advantage of sort of where they are in a value perspective. I think don't discount the aspect of when the Rand gets stronger, just buy some USDT. Fundamentally, you always know there's going to be a 30 cents gap in the 30 cents to where spot price currently is, just on the basis that you don't have to go through exchange control. You don't have to go through the bank fees. You're just buying some spot and you're just holding it. And that really, I played this model a little while ago. The Rand was like 18, 20. I bought some USDT. I just left it. My hypothesis was market's going to reach back to 19 and likely it's going to sell 30%, 30 cents higher than what that spot is. And I know I'm going to maybe rake out 5 to 8% on that. And that's exactly what I did. The volatility is there and it's a method. There's a method of staying, you're going to use your dollars. You're not in a bad case of buying USDT being a stable coin. Not financial advice. It's just a model in that case. But
right. And did you sell your USDT, by the way, for those who don't know, it's Tether. It's a US dollar-backed stablecoin. Did you sell? Because we had the dollar-rand exchange rate up at 1985 at one point?
82.
Pretty close.
Yeah.
And it's now formed a triple top. So it looks like it may break 20.
Correct. So, I mean, when we had our conversations prior and I modeled the RAND outlook, for a perfect storm to hit, and that includes tariffing platinum, which is not, the RAND can see 22, 25 on a perfect storm kind of day. If the ANC and the whole GNU saga really does not move in the favor of more free markets and more rightist policies, I think 22, 25 is not impossible. It's a perfect storm situation to the markets. But I did sell out quite a bit of USDT at that time. Not a bad way of going back into more crypto because it was so weak, you accumulated some more and just bought what was undervalued. I know Solana moved lower, BTC moved lower. Ethereum was almost at like 1,300. Got back in, and those are sort of the plays. You know, you can be stable when buying dollars at certain times, but follow the RAND. Just, I don't think people are, or investors choose a simple methodology of just buying some dollars and holding some dollars. I don't think you're bad off considering how volatile the RAND is.
And just on that point, are we at the bottom of the Bitcoin correction yet? I did say we touched about $74,000. It's back up at about 85 today. That's quite a strong bounce. You think this is the worst is behind us?
I don't think so. I think we still have a lot more pain to feel. And I think we're gonna likely see maybe that 65, 68 range as the storm starts to evolve in terms of tariffs, consumer demand. Well, the ETFs, everyone's really moving into ETFs and no one's really holding spot. So it's really hard to see from an on-chain perspective what the retail market's actually doing. But even if we're looking at just perspectives, ETFs are still accumulating at certain prices. I don't think anywhere below 80 is still a good accumulation price on a discount cost average. Because you still got your BTC is going to go up to hard drive again. You just have to weather the storm in terms of just accumulation and dollar cost averaging. So yeah, my models really show 65, 68 is sort of a level that should be targeting. Well, I'm targeting, but still, I think smaller increments over time, and then at my target, I think I'll get back in at a larger increment as well. I am smaller amounts, not as big as I would like to, just enough to give me a positive outlook, even if I'm wrong at 65 and 68, it's enough to, even if we go back up to 100, it's enough to give me significant profit in the market.
Right. And yeah, those are fairly bold predictions. $65,000 to $68,000 for Bitcoin, and the RAND in a perfect storm situation at 2250. Is that what you said?
2225.
2225, and that perfect storm would be what?
Perfect storm looks more, I would say, political breakdown of the GNU is one. I think is a critical factor. I think DA may be pulling out of the GNU, really upsetting a few policies. Well, there's tons of loopholes now around land without expropriation in terms of exchange control. So I don't believe that's a major factor to a lot of the big players. Government Cyril's investment thesis into the market, I don't think Microsoft is really going to create a lot of jobs. I think that's a lot more money into data centers, into the economy rather than jobs. And I think that's where the narrative was misplaced. I haven't read anything yet about where Microsoft's creating jobs, but I know it would be a key factor in terms of just placing data centers in Africa, meaning stable economy. But overall, I don't see any, I think the VAT is not going to, VAT's going to really cripple the economy as we sort of go into next year and we see that 1%. We haven't really seen more bold introductions of cutting government spending in any way or form. It seems like we're spending more money than we are cutting. And I think just in overall from an investment perspective as well, with such a volatile rand in this case, this opens up cases for the economy that's building SaaS companies, technology companies can really take advantage of this foreign capital coming in, building this technology, help using this technology. In that case, I know we're talking a lot about hydrogen in the market. Very interested in reading a lot about that. But the perfect storm really is more political than it is the volatility of external factors right now. I think very small percentage in probability would play external market, but a lot to do locally after elections. And we saw that breakdown of the GNU. It's more noise than anything else in the market. And I think that's coming from just politically, just everyone not seeing the government take the correct measures in the market.
Fascinating discussion. That was Shivan Mudli, who is macro strategist with 88. Thanks very much for joining us, Shivan.
Thanks, Kieran.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kieran Ryan. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.